9 to 11. On Saturday night, a few showers will persist in the north and the west, but for many it's going to be dry with some clear skies, the risk of a frost as we start Sunday morning. Sunday brings with it a better chance of staying dry with some sunshine, just a few showers scattered around, but still pretty chilly. That's your forecast.
Thanks, Nina. Nina Rich there at the BBC Weather Centre. Now on Radio 4, the final extracts from Tony Benn's diaries, Free at Last, which has been a change to our scheduled Book of the Week. We reach the summer of 1999, and Tony's life is becoming increasingly dominated by Caroline's struggle with cancer. But their celebrations of 50 years of marriage is full of joyous surprises, including the news that their second son, Hilary, is the new Labour MP for Leeds Central.
Saturday, the 12th of June. Our golden wedding in the Churchill Room at the Commons. It was a lovely party, just lovely. I took a group into the chamber of the house. The doorkeeper opened it specially for us and shut it behind us, so we turned the House of Commons chamber into a sort of children's playground. We rehearsed Hilary taking his seat. Jonathan, who's 12, Hilary's youngest son, made a passionate speech against genetically modified food, first from the opposition dispatch box and then from the Prime Minister's dispatch box. Carrie, his younger sister, sat in the speaker's chair and acted the part. Caroline and I were totally exhausted, but it was a lovely day. Monday the 14th of June 1999, Stephen, Joshua and Melissa, Hilary's brothers and sister, arrived and I took them up to the Strangers Gallery. At about 4:15, the speaker said, "Members desirous of taking their seats will now come to the table." So Kevin Barron, Hilary and I walked into the chamber, bowed, walked 5 paces, bowed, walked 5 paces and went to the table. And there was a thunder of cheers from the Labour benches. It was too much for me. I felt my face crumbling and I walked back to my seat. And when Hilary took the oath and then signed the nominal roll and walked past the front bench with people patting him on the back to shake hands with the speaker, I just burst into tears. I was so proud, absolutely as proud as can be. Friday, the 25th of June, 1999. I had a talk to Tom Valens, my agent, and Margaret, and I said, "Look, I've got to decide quite quickly what I'm going to do about standing again." Well, they said, "Tony, there is a big campaign to get rid of you in Chesterfield. It's not personal, but we're not at all sure we could get you reselected. Anyway, we couldn't bear the thought of you being defeated as a result of not being reselected." So that really settled it. I drafted the statement giving my reasons why I was leaving Parliament at the next election. Caroline cut it down, as she always did, to a tiny fraction of what it was and made it clearer. Sunday, the 12th of December 1999, a late lie-in read the papers. The most important news of all is that Mo Molem apparently authorised the bugging of Gerry Adams's car. Now, I have never known the name of a minister used in connection with a bugging. When asked, they always say that this is a matter ministers never discuss. The only conclusion I can reach is that Tony Blair was putting the story out in order to discredit Mo Molem with her friends in Sinn Féin and to discredit her with the left. Monday the 13th of December 1999, in the lobby I went up to Mo Molem and I said, "By the way, I notice, it was released I think over the weekend, that you authorised the bugging of Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness and of a Sinn Féin car during the negotiations on the peace process. I don't know whether you did or didn't, but all I do know is that never in 50 years have I heard it said with authority that a named minister had ordered the interception of a named person, and that could only have come from number 10 Downing Street." Mo said, "I know." So she realises now that the Prime Minister is trying to destroy her, partly, I think, because she was too popular, and partly because the Ulster Unionists hated her anyway.
Hello, This is Daniel Byrne, Tony Byrne's grandson, and I'm in his office, and I'm feeling a bit weird because it's the first time I've ever been speaking on a microphone before. My grandfather's a bit of a nincompoop, that's Tony Byrne, in other words. And
well, that was Daniel, who came down to the office on Saturday the 27th of May and recorded on my diary cassette. Saturday, the 1st of July 2000. Today was the really big day because our youngest son, Josh, and Naz got married. Caroline and I got ready in our best outfits and we went in a chauffeur-driven car to the Chelsea Register office. We had to go all the way round to the disabled entrance, up little lifts, down little lifts, through to the library, and then about 4 o'clock we went into the marriage room where the registrar went through it all. Naz looked dazzlingly beautiful. Tuesday the 5th of September 2000. In the mail this morning a postcard arrived from Jim Callahan. Dear Tony, it said, unlike some, you and I have been fortunate in our wives and our long partnerships with them, so I was very sad to hear of Caroline's illness and send my best wishes to her and to you in your care for her. Ever, Jim Callahan. Wednesday the 6th of September, year 2000, I had a bath this morning and I must report it, a wasp stung my private parts. It's been stinging all day. I could feel this thing flying around in my pants and I tried to swat it, and I probably did succeed and it responded by stinging me. Wednesday the 11th of October, 2000, I realised with a blaze of the obvious today that I'm entirely dependent on women. I've always been dependent on Caroline. I'm dependent on Sheila in the office in London and on Margaret in the office in Chesterfield. I'm dependent on Barbara, who's marvellous. I'm dependent on the district nurses, Hilary, Irene, Beverly, Dixie and Cynthia. I'm dependent on Dr. Jane Pettifer. The realisation that I'm being carried by all these people was a real eye-opener to me. Friday the 3rd of November 2000, Caroline was in great distress today. The doctor thought we should move her to St. Mary's, Paddington. This time we had a St. John ambulance. Two of them were volunteers. I told them that I'd been in the St. John ambulance brigade during the war and I still had their little black first aid book. They said, oh my goodness me, we don't think there's a copy of that even in the archives of St. John ambulance. Stephen, bless his heart, without telling me, arrived at the hospital and stayed all night with Caroline. I can't say politics is my main interest at the moment. What I've learned recently is the tremendous importance of personal relations. Thursday the 16th of November 2000. Dr. Laudell, Caroline's consultant, didn't say very much except that the cancer activity rate, which when normal is 40, was now 389. Thursday the 23rd of November 2000. Well, this diary jumps to 3:15 on the morning of the 23rd of November. 5 hours ago, just 5 hours ago, my beloved Caroline died in Ward 6 at Charing Cross Hospital. All the children came to see her. Every one of the grandchildren came. Her sister Nancy arrived from Cincinnati and her brother Graydon and his wife Sherry. Caroline was so pleased to see them. So we were all there and it was a mixture of laughter and tears. Tears because we love her so much. Laughter because there was so much about her life we could joke about. Sarah, the ward sister, came and said, she's very strong, she's hanging on. Sometimes, you know, it helps if you say, you could let go now if you like. At about 9:45, I leaned over and said, darling, we're all here. You could let go now if you want to. If you want to go, you could let go. I gave her a kiss on her brow, and at 9:56, she quietly stopped breathing. When I look back on Caroline's life, she was the finest person I ever met in the whole of my life. She just absolutely radiated goodness. She had a capacity for love and interest in other people that was unparalleled. She had a most formidable intellect, a tremendously powerful character. She said the other day, this illness is really a test of character. And so it was. Monday the 27th of November 2000, I got up very early, and just before 9 o'clock, Caroline was brought back by the funeral director, and she lay on a trestle in the front room with lots of flowers. I kissed her and dropped tears on her cold, cold face. We went to Golders Green Crematorium and got there about 1:45. Graydon, Hilary, Stephen and Joshua carried her coffin into the chapel and laid it to rest very carefully. Richard Moberly took the service and the chapel was full. There must have been about 80 people there, I should think. We sang the Battle Hymn of the Republic, a tribute to Caroline's American roots. Then after that, I gave my address. I had to read it. I broke down 3 times, but I tried to do credit to her. The children had made many useful amendments because collective effort is better than personal writing. I read it to Caroline yesterday at Kenyon's and she didn't object. The first time she hasn't improved my text herself. Thursday the 7th of December 2000. An awful night with coughing and nightmares, and I got up at about 5:30 and went to Chesterfield for my surgery. When I arrived, I got a taxi to the Labour Club, and as I walked to the bungalow, I just burst into tears. I've spent so many happy times with Caroline there, I realised I couldn't do my surgery. So I rang Margaret and told her. She was so kind. She said she didn't think I should have come today, but I felt I had to go back. Anyway, I slumped in the train, got back, came home feeling absolutely awful, so I forced myself to have a meal, and then I had a hot bath and went to bed. Monday the 25th of December, Christmas Day. Truthfully, I was dreading today, but Josh and Naz came last night, and that helped, and I did sleep. And Josh and Naz, who were cooking all morning, had the idea of looking at the files on Caroline's laptop computer. And Josh found a note saying where the silver had been hidden. It was a miracle. Mum sent us a message on Christmas Day from the next world telling us where to find the silver. Just astonishing. Friday, the 27th of April, 2001. Chesterfield, my last surgery after 50 years. Mr. K wanted proper redundancy after being off sick. Mr. C complained about pigeons. Mr. W, who lost a leg and was picked up for drink driving, came to say he thinks he's won his case, and I was really pleased. Mrs. H had a housing problem. Mr. G was a child support agency case. Mr. S had trouble with his neighbours. Mrs. C wanted to bring her relations over from India. Tuesday the 8th of May 2001, dissolution of Parliament announced. The election is on the 7th of June. Monday, the 14th of May, 2001. Up at 7:15 in the morning, and I had my first hot bath upstairs for ages because Josh had fixed the broken hot water heater. I had a banana, a bit of cheese, and a cup of tea for lunch, then I drove to the House of Commons. When I got there, it must have been about 4:15, I think, and who should I see but Stephen, bless his heart, who'd come to help me pack up. At 5 o'clock, which is the time Parliament was dissolved by royal proclamation, we sat there in an empty room, and as Big Ben struck 5, my parliamentary life came to an end. I felt very relaxed about it. Oh, and I got a pager message just after 5 from a close friend saying, "There is life after Parliament." On the 7th of June 2001, Labour was returned to power for a second term with a majority of 167. Chesterfield fell to the Liberal Democrats. When the membership of the new government was announced, Hillary was appointed as a minister, and I was free at last.
Free at Last was read by its author, the late Tony Benn, and dedicated to the memory of his wife, Caroline. The producer was Jane Ray. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Saturday, the 22nd of March. There are warnings of gales in all areas except Trafalgar. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Faroes, 969, slow moving, filling 979 by 1800 Saturday. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Cira, south at Cira, 40s, Cromarty, 4th. Southerly or southwesterly, 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8 at first, squally showers, moderate or good. Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight, Humber, Thames. Mainly south or southwest, 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8, squally showers, moderate or good.